This is Tea Earl Grey Hot, an unofficial Star Trek fan podcast from the Other Side Podcast Network. Battle. Hello and welcome to episode 42 of Life, the Universe and Everything, an unofficial Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy fan podcast from the Other Side Podcast Network. My name is Yannick and this is T. Earl Grey Hot, but we just couldn't let episode 42 pass without a reference to the great Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
It had to be done.
Yes, it had to be done. Joining me tonight for this episode is someone who is 20 times the number of words in the original edition of the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, kilometers away from me in a straight line. It's my good friend, Dave. Hello, Dave. How are you?
I am very well indeed. Is now the right time to confess that I have still not read The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy?
Well, you know, if you confess, then you're half forgiven. So you already have forgiven. So
I like that approach. Yeah, I like that approach. Okay. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Getting used to working only 50% of my usual work hours. And funny enough, it's like with the containment. I only work half time, but it seems that I don't have much more time for doing stuff because some clients are working, so I just respond to my clients, and then I take care of my daughter on Mondays and Tuesdays, so I actually do some stuff, but I don't have more time for myself, which is fine. That's okay.
Yeah. So pretty much the same as, as it was before.
Yeah, exactly. Just not the same things as before, but still occupied. And joining us tonight for the gazillion times.
I don't remember how many now.
I don't remember either, but it's always a pleasure to receive Nate on the show. Hello, how are you?
I have to make a confession also. I have never read Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy either.
Well.
So I'm in...
That's a beginning company for everything, so...
I don't feel so bad now.
You have your homework for next time.
That's a big book. Last time I looked at it, it was kind of daunting.
It does exist as an audiobook.
Oh.
If you prefer that. Yes.
So I don't think I can do audiobooks.
Really? I like them.
I prefer to read a book.
Yeah.
And yet I do enjoy audio drama. So it's a weird one.
It's weird. Yeah. Okay.
Can I just say how nice it is to have the two of you on the same podcast at the same time.
Yeah, that doesn't happen very often, does it?
No. It should happen more often. You two should start a podcast together.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
What can we do?
What we could do is go back about 20 weeks in the past and start a podcast so that, you know, we would be at episode 9 or something.
That's a good idea.
Hold on. Didn't we record episode 9 last night?
Last night.
Yes.
Yeah. So for the benefit of the listeners, Nathan and I are doing Maker's Corner, another fine member of the Other Side Podcast Network. Find more about our shows on otherside.network.
Ka-ching. But I'm on the other side.
Nicely done.
Of the other side of the podcast network.
Yes, you're
yes.
You're in the US. Well, no, we have two Canadians, but I don't know if that counts as
other side. Yeah, you're also on the other side.
It's on the other side. Hey, Chris. Hey, John. On tonight's show, we are going to review Star Trek The Next Generation Season 1, Episode 9, The Battle. And then we might have a little chat about what happens on the 16th of June every year since 2000 and something.
Five or seven.
Yeah, I have seven in mind, but yeah.
I think it's 2007.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we'll see what it is.
I'm clueless.
Well, you will discover with us.
Woohoo.
So if you guys are ready, we are going to begin our review of Star Trek The Next Generation Season 1, Episode 9, The Battle. So in the teaser, we are in space with the Enterprise. And in response to an order from Starfleet, the USS Enterprise D has been sent to the Zendi Sabu system to rendezvous with a Ferengi Alliance vessel. For 3 days, there has been no message from the Ferengi except standby Enterprise. And yeah, that would be very disturbing, I think, if the only message you had was standby.
It's like watching telly, isn't it?
Yeah. Picard seemed to be bored.
On the upshot, though, that's not the first time you get to see the Ferengi ship, but this is the time that I noticed it really looked like a croissant, and I wanted some butter and maybe some ham, cheese.
Excellent.
Are we going to start talking about food now?
Oh, please. Well, I've just eaten, so I'm all right.
Yeah, me too, but, you know, I can talk food for hours.
Yes.
Dr. Crusher comes to see Captain Picard in his quarters, where he complains of feeling fatigued and having a bad headache. Crusher is so surprised at his suggested diagnosis of a headache, she says, "A what?" And Picard repeats his diagnosis. Crusher assures Picard she knows what a headache is, but says that she doesn't encounter them often. She examines him and can find nothing wrong, but tells him to come to sickbay all the same. He begins to refuse when she orders him to go and says, "You've got an order to report to sickbay from the only person aboard this ship who can give you an order." I think she enjoys that every time.
Yeah, and quite rightly so.
Yeah, yeah. Just then, the Ferengi hail the Enterprise. Picard returns to the bridge and talks with the Ferengi captain, Damon Bok, over the Enterprise's view screen. Bok claims to know Picard, but Picard doesn't recognize Bok at all. He wants to meet Picard in person, so despite being wary of his intentions, Picard agrees to meet him aboard the Enterprise. Now, why was this weird white background on the view screen? I mean,
well, I don't... Unless they've got a green screen behind them and they can put any background they want.
Yeah.
So they could have put a background of the Enterprise D just to confuse him.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Maybe they didn't have a set for that.
I think they ran out of money and time.
It's probable. What I did notice is the when we were watching The Last Outpost a few weeks back, I think it was you, Yannick, that made reference to the fact that the camera was like right in the Ferengi's face.
Yes.
But in the two sections where they were communicating with Bok, they cut the transmission halfway through to have a private talk. And before that happened, you were like a reasonable distance away. But when he came back again, he was like really, really close to it. Not quite as close as he was in The Last Outpost, but certainly closer.
My thought is that the Ferengi are not really good at web conferencing in season one. And it was the first time they had remote working conditions. And so it was all new to them.
In their defense, they did say they don't do visual.
Yes.
Oh, there
they
we
said
go.
That's in The Last Outpost.
They said that The Last Outpost, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. They were looking at the bridge and things like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Now we know why. Yes.
Yes. Yeah, so I was. I also noted that the Ferengi was very close. The shots were very close. It was like, I don't know if they wanted to hide the absence of background or anything, but that was weird. Right.
Maybe they had a booth.
Yeah. On to Act 1 then. Picard goes to sickbay, where Crusher examines him again. He feels like she's running a lot of tests for something as simple as a headache. Dr. Crusher responds that it may be true that headaches were once quite common, before the brain was charted, before they understood the nature of pain. But even with all the tests, she fails to find any medical reason for his headaches. She gives him a painkiller for the time being and asks for him to come back for more tests when the Ferengi matter is settled.
I love the line from Crusher where after she gives him this painkiller and he said the pain's gone. And Crusher said, "Well, the pain is actually still there. It's just cloaked." How on earth do you cloak a pain?
Well, you inhibit the receptors in the brain.
That's really what the painkillers are, aren't they?
Yeah.
Really? Yeah. That's what painkillers do.
Yeah.
It's mask the pain.
It's just never equated analgesic to a cloaking device.
But that's what it is, really.
I suppose so, yeah.
Yeah. It's a chemical that tells your brain, hey, don't worry about this information. Just worry about something else, and you'll come back to that later.
Can you get me some paracetamol? I need to cloak my headache.
It's like when the check engine light is on your car and you just remove the bulb, problem solved.
Yes. Exactly. Exactly. Yes.
Exactly.
Yes. Exactly. Picard returns to the bridge where Wesley Crusher arrives and tells Geordi that when he was boosting the long-range sensors, he detected a ship approaching. Then LaForge detects the ship as well. It's an unidentified Constellation-class starship, which is neither responding to hail nor sending out call letters. Picard begins to tell Wesley what the correct procedure is, but suddenly stops. When Riker asks what is wrong, Picard said it's just a mild headache. He then resumes telling Wesley everything he did wrong. That headache didn't seem to be mild. I mean, he stopped talking and he really looked at, as if he was in pain.
At this point, you would expect, because of how quickly the pain is coming and going, you kind of go beyond the definition of headache here. Yeah. There's clearly something else wrong here, but yet no one's picked up on it.
No, especially the doctor.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what you have. I will give you a painkiller.
It's because they're all so stoic.
Yeah.
There is that.
The time arrives for the Ferengi to beam over, and three of them materialize on the bridge. Buck and two of his officers, Kazago and Rata.
Why did they beam them to the bridge?
I have no idea. That's what we said also about... Which one was it? The guy who abducted Tasha. They were beamed...
Yes.
...in a shuttle bay. Why? We don't know.
Yeah, and also, when were the... Bleh. When did they start controlling transporters from the security station?
Yeah, one of those weird things in this episode.
Mm.
Not another virtual desktop. You just have to, you know, on the pager, you just tap that, and then it goes to another desktop. I do it on my computer all the time. I have a pager, multiple desktops. It works great. You keep the transporter controls on another.
Yeah.
Another one, yeah.
Maybe. We know the stations and the computer on the Enterprise are very flexible. You can pretty much control everything from anywhere.
Helm from Security 2, for example. Sorry, Science 2.
Yeah. So it's a modular thing.
I wonder if, budget-wise, they were kind of under the gun. Because if you look at all the different things that they kind of skipped out on, so any of the additional camera views, like camera setup and whatnot, like, you know, like transporter walking the hallway, they weren't doing that. The set... behind the Ferengi, they didn't do that. Obviously, the budget wasn't there, is what I'm guessing, is why they didn't do it.
Mm-hmm. That's possible, yes. Picard introduces the bridge crew, but all the Ferengi seem to be interested in is the fact that there are female on the crew, clothed females, which Troyes and Riker seems to find amusing. The Ferengi also want to know the price to pay to purchase data, but Riker tells them it's just second-hand merchandise. A piece of junk, basically. Data didn't find that very amusing.
I think Riker and Troy found it amusing probably for different reasons, though.
Yes,
I would say.
Probably. Because, yeah, Riker, I think Riker said when the Ferengi said that there were closed females, he said, yes, that they are. As if he was a bit disappointed.
Dirty worm.
Buck tells Picard that the incoming starship is under their control and is a gift to honor the hero of Maxia, Captain Picard. Picard realizes they are referring to an incident that took place 9 years prior while he commanded the USS Stargazer. Traveling through the Maxia Zeta system, they were attacked by an unknown vessel which Picard was forced to destroy. It turns out that the vessel was Ferengi. The captain apologizes to Bok, to which the Ferengi replies that such mistakes happen in space. Now, to me, that was a big red alarm there. You know, the Ferengi that doesn't complain about having lost something. That was a warning. Something was wrong.
And again, no one picked up on it. No one picked up on the subtlety of... It was almost like a veiled threat.
Yeah, to be fair, it's only the second time they deal with the Ferengi. So we know them, you know, because of all the seasons after that. But it's only the second time they deal with them. So maybe they are not really used to that.
Yeah, this is true.
That makes sense.
While the unidentified ship approaches, Rata announces that there is no one on board and that the logs will be downloaded to the Enterprise at a price. But Bok cuts him off and says there will be no price, much to the other's surprise. Again, big red flag. Something is wrong.
Particularly the last time that they encountered the Ferengi, they were left with no doubt that the Ferengi were driven by money, by profit, by commerce. And then to say, we've got this thing, it's obviously worth more money than you could ever dream of.
Yeah.
And that's even in a society that doesn't have money.
Yeah.
Have it for free.
Yeah. Nope. So apparently that they didn't pick up on that. Well. If they had, there wouldn't have been an episode, so...
True.
Picard is then hit by another headache, and Troi also feels something. She says it felt like something from Picard's past. The Ferengis once again mention that the ship is a gift in honor of the aforementioned battle, and suggest that Picard should have a closer look. He orders LaForge to magnify the image on the viewscreen. It is the Stargazer, which the Ferengi found adrift, and are now giving back to Picard. Bok says, it's a gift, free of charge, which his subordinates don't like. This Ferengi is up to no good, I'm telling you. That's not something a Ferengi does.
No, not at all.
I mean, even offering a drink or something like that is out of character for a Ferengi, so offering a ship, it's like, as you said, it's...
I did notice that when Picard was hit by his last headache in that scene, Riker actually called out to sickbay.
Yeah.
And Picard said something like, no, it's fine, or don't worry about it. But there was no response from sickbay at all over the comm system.
True.
Now, I would have expected that if someone had called to sickbay, it's like when you call 911 or 112 or whatever. If you call them, they should still answer, and they should still say, what's the matter?
Yeah, that's true.
But there was not even a response from sickbay saying, okay, no worries, we're here if you need us.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. Didn't say a word.
That is a good observation. I didn't pick up on that, but you're right. That was obviously a breach in protocol somewhere.
Yeah, or again,
or
budget
bad
cuts,
directing.
So they didn't. did you notice that when Riker called sickbay, he did the exact same thing he did in Nepenthe. He looked up.
Ah, yeah, right. Of course. So no, I didn't pick up on that.
I picked on that, yeah. But only because you noticed that,
yeah,
on Nepenthe.
Yeah. Oh, well spotted, yes.
He looked up,
nice,
and said, Sigbe.
That's where the speakers are.
Yeah.
They keep the Alexa on the ceiling is what they do.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what we said last time. before we get into Act 2, we'd like to say hello to Eleni, who has joined us in the YouTube chat room. Hello, Eleni.
Hello, Eleni.
Hello, Eleni.
Our new social media manager.
Indeed, yes.
Yeah, yeah. We're getting so big that we need a social media manager.
Yes, Laney also points out that Picard apologised in that last scene. Presumably, I can't remember the exact circumstances about it, but I do remember him kind of quite timidly apologising for for having his headache or for faltering in what he was doing. Again, another thing that was incredibly out of character for Picard.
Yes. Yes. This episode is full of things that they should have noticed, but they didn't.
But, as you quite rightly said, had they noticed them, then the episode would have ended 5 minutes ago.
Yes. Right, so on to Act 2. Picard is back in sickbay, describing his new symptoms to Dr. Crusher and Counselor Troy. He says his new headache hit with more impact. Counselor Troy states that she felt something too, and describes it as thought but more mechanical in nature. Picard thinks she was picking up on his thoughts, because at the moment in question, he was thinking about being at the helm of the Stargazer. As he is describing his thoughts about the incident on the Stargazer, he begins to experience physical sensations like being able to smell the smoke from the fire in his memories.
I don't know whether it's medically recognized, but I think it might have been debunked recently. But I've heard lots of reports of if people smell smoke or smell burning, it can be interpreted as the onset of a stroke, of a brain hemorrhage.
Really?
Yeah, I can't remember. I think I heard someone say a couple of weeks ago that actually that isn't proven.
Okay,
that's a relief. I gotta tell you, that is a relief right there to know. I'm always smelling smoke.
So if you smell smoke, you may or may not have a stroke.
Well, usually it's a smell of like letting the magic smoke out of your electronics. That's what I'm always smelling.
Yep.
Is that because that's actually happening, Nate?
Maybe.
When you're blowing things up left, right, and center.
It does happen from time to time, but sometimes I smell it like preemptively. So, you know.
Then just unplug it quickly.
What fun is that?
Exactly. I do admit that if I do smell smoke and there's no sign of any fire, I do end up putting my arms in the air to see if there is a stroke coming on.
Yeah, well, you know, better be safe.
Well, yeah. There's lots of adverts on telly here about the signs of an oncoming stroke. So they kind of hammer it into you about watching to see if the face has fallen. Can you raise your arms? Can you smile? So, yeah, I tend to do that every so often just to make sure I'm all right.
Yeah, I need you for the next, what was it, 7 years?
14.
14 years, so yeah, I need
you. Massive if you haven't kicked me out by then.
For the next 14 years to co-host this show. Later in the observation lounge, Picard tells the crew about the battle. They had been traveling at warp 2 through the Maxia Zeta system when they were fired upon by an unidentified starship, damaging their shields in the confusion. Moments later, the Stargazer was hit again. Suddenly, Picard asks the Stargazer's weapon officer, Viggo, to identify the attacking ship. This surprises the Enterprise crew, and Picard then realizes what is said. He continues with the story, saying he ordered a sensor bearing on the enemy vessel as it came around for another pass. He then performed what is now known as the Picard maneuver. He ordered a jump to high warp, making it appear to the Ferengi for a second that the Stargazer was in two places at once. The Ferengi vessel fired at the Stargazer's former position, while the actual ship pulled out of warp right next to it. He was then able to destroy the Ferengi vessel, but was forced to abandon ship, and he and his crew drifted around space in shuttlecraft for weeks. Picard now wants to get on the Stargazer, which Riker agrees with, once he makes sure she's safe. Right. We need. This is the geeky 15 minutes. So hang on to your seats.
Okay.
Light travels at 300,000 kilometers per second.
Yes.
Give or take a few hundreds. For the ship to appear at two places at once for just 1 second, the Stargazer would have to have traveled 300,000 kilometers at warp almost 10. So it's quite almost instantly. Actually, the double image must have lasted more than 1 second because, you know, of the reaction time of the Ferengi captain and things like that. But let's imagine 1 second. there is no way the Ferengi vessel could shoot at the Stargazer from that distance, from 300,000 kilometers away, and make that kind of damage. Plus, the closer ship, the one that got out of warp, it would have looked like, I don't know, 50 times bigger than the other one. So I'm sorry, but the Pican maneuver is a fraud.
I'm with you on the size of the vessel, because over there it would appear smaller than it would be as if it was here.
Yeah.
But I'm afraid I've just debunked your theory about it being in two places at the same time. They're not talking about visually. They're talking about sensors. So while the information was still coming in about the Stargazer being at point A, and it was coming on other sensors and being displayed on their systems, by the time that information got to them, the Stargazer was somewhere else. So it wasn't a case of physically, with your eyes, seeing it in two places at once. It was a crossover of data feeds. At least that's what this article says.
I mean, it makes sense. You know, it faked them out with, moving quick, but with starships instead of, on the basketball court.
It's like the old persistence effect of really, really poor cathode ray tubes.
Yes.
You know, when you're moving an object across the screen and you get the ghosting of it behind, which slowly starts to fade away. Similar thing to that. If something disappears from point A and reappears at point B, you have both images on screen. Probably for a second, maybe two.
Yeah. But
I'm really clutching at straws here. Help me out.
Those things are at the same distance because they're on the screen. So,
yes.
But there, it says that they were far away and they jumped to high warp and then appeared in front of the Ferengi vessel. Yep. So if it's not light, let's say it's sensor data or something like that, we know that that probably cannot go faster than light. So, let's say it goes like half the speed of light. So it's only 150,000 kilometers. Still not possible. And there's something later in the episode that is even worse than that. So
we'll
get to that later on.
And another good point about the warp speed maneuver is that when you tell a starship to go to warp speed, it takes a while to happen.
Yeah.
When you tell a ship to come out of warp speed, it takes a while to happen.
Yeah.
It's not like it's right, do it now, bosh, you're over there.
More on that later.
Maybe because the Stargazer had four warp nacelles, it could do that.
Maybe.
Like popping the clutch. Like popping the clutch on a manual.
Okay.
Yeah.
If that theory were true, you would still see nacelle spin.
Yeah, I don't know.
If I drop the clutch in my car, I'm sat there for about 3 seconds while the wheels are still spinning, blowing blue smoke into the air.
But do you smell that smoke? And of all the...
Then you would have to raise your arms.
Not when I'm driving, though. You can't do that when you're driving.
Officer, I was smelling smoke.
Of all the things of that story, that the whole Picard maneuver thing doesn't bother me as much as the fact that they abandon a starship. Yeah. Isn't that kind of like...
Yeah, well, especially with some information we get later in the episode. I mean...
It just seems odd.
We'll see that. We'll come back to that also later.
Wouldn't you have to destruct a starship if you left
it? Yes, that's the standard procedure, if I recall, that you don't just abandon the ship like that in space. Especially in part of space that you don't really know.
I can suspend reality or suspend belief, whatever, that the Picard maneuver would actually work. I can, we don't really know subspace mechanics. You know, maybe there was some way they could punch it and let it off real quick. I mean, although they would never, maybe they can do that. It's never done again. But That doesn't really bother me as much as they abandoned their starship. Is that, I mean, does it just seem?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah,
like, I have a harder time accepting that piece of the story. I know they talk about in another episode about the court martial around this, but nonetheless, that's actually the part I have the hardest time with.
Yeah, you don't have a ship without districting it.
And don't they have like starship tugboats? Don't they have those things? You know, they can go and
yes, they do
hitch up and take it out. I don't understand why they couldn't, you know, send up a flagpole.
Because
you know,
he thought maybe in 9 years that would make a good story.
Yeah, I don't know. Just to me, just there's a lot of like problems I have with that.
Yeah,
that's all.
Yeah, I have. Yeah, that's one of the problems with this episode.
One of many, by the sounds of it.
Data, Yar, and Worf and LaForge beam over to inspect the Stargazer. LaForge gets the emergency power going on, and as everything looks all right, Picard beams over. He affectionately acknowledges his old ship and says, "Hello, old friend." Goes around the bridge, listens to Data reading the last log entry he made himself. He then goes to look at his old cabin. He's going through his things when he suddenly gets another headache. He grabs his head and falls back in agony. Among his things, in an old chest, a pink sphere glows. Bok is controlling it aboard the Ferengi vessel. Crusher passes by and sees Picard in pain. She brings him back to the Enterprise, telling him that his belongings will be beamed over later. And no one saw that big pink sphere in the trunk.
No.
You would think, you know, when I go to Europe or come back from Europe, I go through customs, right? You think there's some sort of a customs process? You know, if you're going to bring a bunch of stuff on the ship, that someone's going to root through it, make sure that everything is okay, you know, you'd think.
Yeah, you'd think, but no.
Yeah, I have a harder time with that than I do with the Picard maneuver as well.
Yeah, because, I mean, we saw that on the screen and Picard was sitting like, 2 meters away from that. He didn't see anything. Obviously, they transported that back on the Enterprise and he didn't see anything. And they even mentioned the chest after later on in the episode.
Yeah. It does seem like a breach of protocol, not examining, scanning the items in that chest before. Yeah, decontaminating.
Making sure it's Picard's, because it's supposed to be his belongings.
Did you pack your own bag?
Yeah.
Bingo.
Yes.
Also, we have one of the biggest mysteries of Star Trek. Like, on every ship that has suffered heavy damage, on every series, the consoles on the bridge are covered with stones, rocks. Where the heck did those rocks come from?
Maybe it's actually plaster, you know, when they spackle the walls and make everything nice and smooth.
Yeah, that would be reasonable, yeah. Although making the walls out of plaster itself is concerning.
Yeah, the starship. Like,
it's not exactly a flexible building material.
No.
Maybe it's some sort of a plastic, you know, that they call it, was it something titanium, duranium? What do they call it? What are the ships made out of? Maybe some sort of that.
Yeah.
But that's supposed to be very strong, and now it's you know, like stone, and I don't know, it's...
If it was that strong, you would expect it to come down in, like, significantly larger pieces.
Exactly.
Not little bits like that.
Yeah.
Sorry, for the benefit of the tape, like the size of what's that, a nickel, a dime?
Something like that.
Depends on your country.
I'm trying to base it to the largest possible audience.
Maybe it's like tempered, you know, like tempered safety glass, how it goes into little bits when it's impacted.
Maybe
it's safety tritanium and it just blows into pieces.
But if it was that, it would break in little pieces, but it would not, you know, fall. A windshield, when it breaks, it doesn't explode in tiny pieces everywhere. It breaks in tiny pieces, but it holds together.
That's because the windshield has mylar in between, but the side windows, those do not, and those will go everywhere.
Front screens are laminated. They're glass and plastic.
Oh, that shows how much I know about windshields and cars in general.
Every day is a school day.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, it could be like burnt plastic chunks, you know, because if there's a plasma leak or whatever, some sort of disruption, you know, massive energy. Yeah. I guess maybe chunks of plastic, maybe. Yeah. Maybe they 3D printed everything in PLA and it's very brittle.
And it's been there for a while and now it's very brittle.
If it was a form of plastic that was then warp plasma damage or whatever, then that would explain the possible reason why the starship was not destroyed. Because the starship, in order for the starship to be destroyed, it has to be operational.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
Jody was able to turn the emergency power back in like 3.5 seconds.
But it was in the possession of the Ferengi for a while, so they might have been tooling with it.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Probable.
Jody even noticed that it was amazing that the emergency cells or power cells, or what, I don't remember exactly what he said, was still working, and that didn't ring an alarm in them. Oh, it's still working. Nice.
Yeah, why did they call him out right there? So it's still working. Why'd you abandon ship?
Yeah, and more on that later. The Enterprise tractors the Stargazer. Data tells Picard that Starfleet is sending a tug to bring it to Zendi Starbase 9 before Picard goes to his quarters for a rest.
There's the tug.
Yes, here's the tug. Troy is worried about Picard, but cannot say why and what's going on. In his quarters, Picard starts to dream about the battle. Meanwhile, in the ready room, Data shows Commander Riker a personal log that Picard supposedly recorded, claiming that he attacked the Ferengi vessel without provocation and that the Ferengi ship was under a flag of truce. According to Picard's personal log, recorded with his own voice, the fire on board the Stargazer was caused by an accident in engineering. Dun, dun, dun. The mystery thickens.
It does.
Whoever faked the this log had access to a very advanced technology, because I was not able to notice anything. Well, I guess Patrick Stewart recorded that, but as a fake recording, they could have added some clues that it was fake, but it was really as if Picard had recorded that. I don't know how they did that, but
no, I know what you're trying to say, like artifacts,
yeah,
that you pick up from when someone's taken lots of bits of, like Wesley with his Picard box,
yes, exactly,
where you could tell quite easily that it wasn't actually somebody saying something. It was spliced together with lots of different different things.
But this one was quite perfect.
Yes, it was. I kept hearing Zendi.
Yes.
Not Zendi. Yeah. It wasn't just me, was it?
No. I thought they were talking about the Zendi from Enterprise.
I've never known a science fiction franchise to almost reuse names as much as Star Trek, because there are so many things that are either actually the same name but completely different, or the name is just so slightly different that you confuse it with something else.
Like Constitution and Constellation?
Yeah, stuff like that.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's an explanation for that, by the way.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so when they went to make the this episode, originally they were going to have a Constitution-class starship, and so they overdubbed Constellation because the lip movement's the same and made it a different ship.
Oh. That's
interesting.
Yeah, that's where the budget went.
Overdubbing.
Talking about where the budget went, Picard's quarters.
Yes.
Looked like a really cheap hotel room. I would have expected something just a little more opulent for somebody of Picard's rank. I mean, the bed was very basic. There was the walls. There was nothing on the walls. Just a basic grey, almost like fabric interior. It looked like someone's spare room rather than the personal quarters of a starship captain.
Yeah. Now that you mention it, yeah.
Well, you know, he just moved in, really. I mean, it's the first season, so he hasn't put his pictures on the wall yet. You know, he's probably been very busy.
No. I'm thinking kind of like even base specification. I'm not talking about gold taps and chandeliers, but I would have expected something a little bit more than bare bones.
Yeah.
Unless it is down to the captain to do it up himself.
It's a military ship, right?
No, it's an exploration ship.
But still, Starfleet's a military organization.
Yeah, I suppose it is.
But the captain's quarters are getting better later on in the series.
New replicator technology.
Yeah.
No, I suppose.
New budget, things like that. Maybe he saves money every week, you know, and then can buy stuff when he to stop it. Starfaces.
And the cash.
Somebody buys
economy.
Him a 3D printer.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
In the chat room, I think it was related to the Picard maneuver. Lainey says that the Stargazer didn't have a spore drive. With a spore drive, he could have really moved faster. But yet again, the Discovery, it takes a few seconds to activate the spore drive, you know, when it starts spinning and everything.
It takes a few seconds to activate, but once it's activated, the movements are near on instantaneous.
Yeah.
There was, I can't remember which episode it was, but there was one episode where, well, we now know it was Lorca trying to map out the spore network.
Mm-hmm.
But there was one particular ship, and they just probably bounced at like every single possible point around the outside of it. And that was pretty much instant.
Yes. Faster than any warp drive, anyway, to
Certainly.
Activate.
Yeah.
Right. Act 3 already. Riker shows Picard the log. Well, he plays the log.
Yeah.
Yeah. He thinks the Ferengi might have faked Picard's voice. Yeah, right. And asks Data to look into it. Picard denies making the entry, but tells Riker he has to report his finding to Starfleet. They have 2 full days to get to the bottom of this, as Picard fears Starfleet might ask for his command if he doesn't have a good explanation. Then the headache returns. Riker tells him to relax before he leaves, and the captain starts listening to the logs again. Because when you have a headache, the first thing you do is just jump into working again. That's weird.
He's a driven fellow.
Yeah.
And he could have had a great excuse. But it's like, if Starfleet questions him, he just goes, looks at the Admiral and says, fake news, and then they move on. There we go.
Yeah. Well, he could tweet that to the Admiral. To the Admiral. Right.
Or Facebook or whatever.
Yeah, or space tweet or subtweet.
Facebook.
Subtweet.
Send the subtweet to the Admiral. Yeah, that could be fun. In the ready room, Riker contacts Kazago, Box first officer, on a secure channel. Well, it was not so secure initially because Kazago had to secure it.
I've written a whole paragraph on that.
Right. Okay. So I'll let you read that.
No. It's fine. You've pretty much done it. Yeah. LaForge made the channel secure, and then Riker said to Kazago, is it secure your end? Click, it is now. Which means it wasn't secure in the first place. It has to be secure on both sides. And I would have expected at least an image glitch as the negotiation takes place, and then a little green padlock in the top corner to say this is secured.
This communication is certified by Let's Encrypt.
Yes. But no, that was a bit poor. But there again, I don't think that people were as au fait with security back in 1987. So,
and probably not as picky as us, because honestly, I was looking for those things, you know. And now, when I watch an episode for this show, I look for those things because that's fun. That's the things we have to talk about. We can talk about in the episode. So.
Yes.
Yeah. Riker wonders if Kazago knows the details of the Battle of Mexia, which Kazago refers to as an infamy. Riker begins to offer evidence that the log was falsified, but Kazago stops him and remarks that Riker probably didn't contact him to discuss the annulled battle. Riker asks Kazago why Bok had returned the ship if he knew about the alleged attack. Kazago, feeling insulted, hangs up on Riker. And again, we had the white background with the Ferengi in full screen. So, you know, they didn't build a set for the Ferengi. Maybe they, you know, they just didn't know. Because the first time we also had a white background with a full screen Ferengi. So
in this episode?
Yeah. No, in the Last Outpost.
Yeah, Last Outpost. If I think at one stage you couldn't even see the background because we were so close. His face just filled the entire screen.
So my guess is that they hadn't maybe thought about how a Ferengi vessel would look on the inside, and so they didn't bother putting it back. Maybe the white background was supposed to be replaced, as you said earlier, but it was not. I don't know.
It kind of worked. Because it presented this like air of mystery of the Ferengi.
Yeah.
And it might be at that point, bearing in mind this is the second time now we've met the Ferengi in our timeline, in our chronology, that they hadn't yet designed the interior of a Ferengi ship.
It's entirely possible, yes.
Yeah. My quote of the week was in this scene.
Ah, which one?
When Kazago said to Riker, "As you humans say, I'm all ears."
Yes.
I fell off my chair. I apologize if that's racist, but I fell off my chair. I found that so amusing.
Yes, it almost made my quote of the week, but not quite.
Oh, you have another one. Okay, yes. Interesting.
Yes.
Well, he was just addressing the elephant in the room. I mean, basically.
Yeah.
Are you saying that Kazago looked like an elephant?
Yes.
Oh, it's got big ears. Picard is in his quarters when Crusher arrives. He asks what's wrong with him, but the doctor cannot help. On the Ferengi ship, Bok is apparently turning a device to a higher settings, laughing. On the Enterprise, Picard tells Crusher the headache is worsening, and she suggests it might be related to the arrival of the Stargazer. He remarks that the headache started before the ship arrived. However, he realizes that she might be right and starts recounting the events that took place at the Battle of Mexia. For 3 nights, Picard had a dream about the Stargazer, hearing the voices of his old crew and his own voice giving the order. That, plus the log, makes him wonder if he's going crazy. Crusher gives him a sedative and puts him to bed. He starts to dream about the battle again and relives it, seeing the crew and the bridge and performing the Picard maneuver again. Bok laughs aboard his own ship as he manipulates a matching sphere to the one on Picard's chest.
I misread that. I thought when I first read that it meant Picard's chest, as in his body.
Ah.
But it was actually referring to the storage chest that was taken from the Stargazer. And I was like, I was looking for that scene and trying to, you know, where's this scene with Picard with a sphere in his chest?
Yeah.
And it wasn't there.
No, it's in his quarter.
So it took me a while. I think I watched that scene about 3 times trying to find it.
All right. So if you watch the scene 3 times, you now know what I'm about to say. It's geek time again. So in this scene, Picard performed the Picard maneuver. The Stargazer traveled for 9 seconds at warp 9. 9 seconds at warp 9 between the order he gives and then asking full stop reverse, which basically took about a second or a second and a half to execute. But let's not get into that. 9 seconds at warp 9. According to Wikipedia, warp 9 is 250 million kilometers per second. So the Stargazer was about 2.3 billion kilometers away from the Ferengi ship. There's no way at that distance that they were engaged in battle.
But the light, then they reversed.
And then they reversed a little bit.
Can you reverse at warp speed? I don't know.
I don't know.
Reverse.
At that distance, the light from the Stargazer would have taken 7,600 seconds to reach the Ferengi vessel. That's a little over 2 hours. So there's no way this pickup ever can work.
Yeah, that no.
No.
No. No, not at all.
No. End of geek mode. Oh, I still like this maneuver, but I like to pick on that because obviously it was a good idea. They just didn't think that through, and that, yeah, you know, it makes for good TV, so.
I don't think they had like a math science person on the team yet, I think in the first season, because if you look, those things got cleaned up later on as it progressed, because I think they had like a technical advisor on the staff. So had they had a technical advisor, that wouldn't have been an issue.
They would have had to think about something else, but I mean, it's a good idea. It's fun. It's just, you really have to suspend this belief and even farther than that, because even if you believe that it's possible, then even then, if you believe that it's possible to be in space and travel faster than light and almost at an almost infinite speed and then stop right there, I mean, the initial dampener should, you know, they must have worked a lot. Going from infinite to zero.
You realize that if we were actually reviewing the original screening of this episode and we were coming out with theories like this, that we would have been shut down and both of us would currently be chained up in a dungeon somewhere.
Probably, yes. Probably. Anyway, on to Act 4. In Picard's ready room, Data is informing Riker that after comparing the Stargazer's main computer log with Picard's personal log, he found a discrepancy in the log's checksum.
No.
Yeah. When Riker asks what it means, Data starts explaining what a checksum is, but that's not what Riker wanted to know. For a moment there, I thought, you know, Data was going to say, but that's not important right now. That's a tribute to the Airplane series of film.
Yes. And don't call me.
What does that mean? It means there's a problem in the data, but that's not important right now. Data concludes that one of the logs is a forgery, but LaForge corrects him and says the personal log is a forgery, to which Data says, that's what I said. It's one of them. Data being Data again.
Yes.
Picard enters the room, looking a lot better. He asks about their report on the logs, and both Data and LaForge reiterate that the personal log is a forgery. Crusher enters soon after and is surprised to see the captain up and about. He dismisses everyone except Riker, whom he tells to disengage the tractor beam, given that the Stargazer's inertia will carry her along with the Enterprise.
Why did Crusher call Riker number one?
Yes, good observation.
I cannot recall any other instance of that happening.
That was weird.
Yeah.
It was very weird.
It's something that's reserved for the captain. Well, at least that's what I thought.
Hang on. We've already established that under certain circumstances, Crusher outranks Picard. So maybe she was like practicing for when she took over the Enterprise herself.
I like that explanation. Let's go with that.
Yes.
It was weird.
Let's go with that. Yeah.
Because she always calls him Will, because they're peers. They're both 05s rank wise, officer rank number 5. Mm-hmm. They're both 05s. So they can go by first name. They can talk familiar to one another.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, but I liked your idea that she's practicing for.
Yeah, I do too.
For when she takes over the ship. Yeah, maybe she's the evil Dr. Crusher from the Mirror Universe.
Yeah, yeah, that would work. That would work.
Yeah, sure. In Sigbay, Dr. Crusher is discussing the headaches with Troy. None of them can make any sense of the situation. Wesley answers and tells them that he noticed the captain's brain patterns were exactly the same as low-intensity transmission detected coming from the Ferengi ship. But since engineering has nothing that looks like it on record, he cannot tell them anything else. They both report Wesley's finding to Riker, noticing that something out there is affecting the captain's thought process. Riker checks on Picard's location and finds out that he has beamed onto the Stargazer. Question. Since when does the computer volunteers new information without being asked?
Right, I picked up on this one, and it did seem really odd. Not just because it volunteered that information without being asked for it, but it actually specifically interrupted what Riker was saying in order to present it.
Yeah.
That'll be the moment that I throw my Alexa away.
Yeah.
Well, no, absolutely. Yeah.
It's time to change the... to reprogram the Enterprise when it starts making decisions and then interrupting humans. Aboard the Stargazer, Bok meets Picard and raises the ship's shields. He is carrying his pink sphere, and Picard has another huge headache. On the Enterprise bridge, the crew detects a low-intensity beam from inside the captain's quarters. I mean, it's a bad time.
Yeah, it's been there long enough.
Yeah. Bok tells Picard that the ship the Stargazer destroyed was his son's first command as a daemon. Bok has spent years devising a suitable revenge and bought the two spheres with his life savings. He leaves the sphere on the bridge and beams back onto his own vessel, leaving Picard to relieve the battle. When Geordi detected the signal and Data located it, Worf mentioned that they had brought a big chest from the Stargazer. I mean, why at this moment did you remember the specifically the chest and nothing else? Why not before? Why not? This whole sphere business is weird. As you said, it should have been detected when it has been beamed on the ship, and now they only now remember the chest for no apparent reason. Because why would the sphere be in? Well, they didn't even know it was a sphere at the time. So why remember the chest and nothing else?
It is really odd.
Yeah, I mean, Worf did make a point of saying that it was extremely heavy, which does then make me wonder why they didn't look at it first.
Yeah.
Because if it was that heavy, it probably contained something it shouldn't do. Just saying.
Yeah. Very weird. But, hey, they found it.
Better late than never.
Yeah, better late than never. Yeah, true. On to Act 5 now. Riker tries to call Picard about the Stargazer, but gets no answer. The Stargazer, almost fully armed and having almost no damage to her main systems, turns to attack them. Crusher and Troy realize that Picard might not have noticed the device in his quarters, and that everything that happened until now was a preparation for what's to come. So back to what you said, Nate, about abandoning ship. We now know that the ship is almost fully functional with some minor systems burn and fully armed. So why abandon the perfectly working ship? I have no idea.
Unless if Damon Bok took the time to fix it. But that's that's going to be a lot of extra profit loss. You know, that combined with the two spheres, that just seems unreasonable.
No, it doesn't, because he spent a lot of time putting this whole charade together for Picard's, and he said Kirk's benefit, for Picard's benefit. No, I wouldn't be surprised at all if he'd spent... I mean, the fact that he spent his entire life savings in order to buy these two spheres that are kind of like the catalyst to the entire process, then no, I would very much expect that he's expended the time to get the Stargazer working again, at least to a point where the illusion of him being on the ship still and presumably it blowing up is a possibility.
Does it just seem odd, though, that it... I mean, if it was so bad they had to abandon ship, that Bok could fix it up enough where all the systems worked and he would have nobody familiar with these systems?
And also reprogram the computer. because right. they when Picard is on the bridge, he's alone, and the computer does everything.
Yeah, to take commands. Yeah. Yeah. It just seems, you know. Okay, I'll suspend disbelief for that.
9 years could do it in spare time.
That's true. Yeah, weekend project. You know, like restoring a Corvette. You know, I get it.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly that. Just a very, very big Corvette.
Right.
Maybe we can get Damon Buck on the Maker's Corner and tell us how he did that. now that we talk about that, I wonder, you know, if Picard abandoned the ship and now he comes back and he can see that it's actually, you know, in working order, why doesn't that raise a red flag in his head? Like, you know, I abandoned this ship because it was almost dead and now I'm back here and it's working?
Because he's under the control of the sphere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He also said it was a gift. So, I mean, obviously they would say, you don't look a gift horse in the mouth, right?
Yeah.
Mm.
It was refurbished.
But there's also the frog in a pot scenario as well. If you drop, was it mentioned on last week's show? I can't remember. If you drop a frog into a pot of boiling water, it'll jump straight out again. But if you put it in the pot in cold water and then warm it up, then it will slowly boil to death. And in terms of how Picard is reacting to this illusion that's being put into his brain of him being on the Stargazer in that battle, it's something that's built up over a period of time through these headaches, through the hallucinations he's been having. So it's clearly a lot more acceptable. He's accepting the illusion a lot more than, well, we are.
Yeah, which is what Troy and Crusher said earlier.
Mm.
Riker hails the Ferengi vessel, asking to talk to Bok. But Kazago responds that he is busy in the lab. Riker shows the sphere to Kazago, wondering if that could be the reason why Picard had beamed to the Stargazer. Kazago recognized the sphere as a thought maker, a device that is forbidden. Riker asks him what is going on, but Kazago is not willing to question his daemon's motivations yet. Yeah, so Kazago was troubled by the fact that they had the sphere. First, he said that if Picard was the owner of this, it was not. He was hungry about that. But then we might have realized very quickly that Bok was actually the owner of the sphere, and it was the beginning of the end for Bok. I mean, Kazago and don't remember the name of the other one. They were pretty upset that the Bok was giving up the log. Well, first the log and then the ship without any compensation. So I think one of them said it was ugly to offer them the ship.
Ugly, very ugly, I think he said.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, towards the beginning of the episode.
Suddenly, Yara tells that she receives a communication from the Stargazer. Captain Picard comes on the view screen, asking the Enterprise to not fire again. He obviously is reliving the Battle of Mexia. He asks for the shields to be raised, and the communication is lost. Ghosts of his old crew appear alongside Picard on the bridge of the Stargazer. Yeah, that was weird. It was lost, Picard. It was fully relieving the Battle of Mexia, and it was gone.
It was very odd to watch him. Certainly, initially when he was, he appeared to be on his own on the bridge of the Stargazer, and then later on when his crew, in quotes, with him as well, the original Stargazer crew with him as well. You could see that he was completely committed to this illusion that he was being he was placed in.
What I noticed about that scene was that the logs were obviously false because he was reliving how he remembered it, and not how the falseness of those logs, that, you know, how they're twisted. So
yeah, good catch. Yeah,
yeah.
So that was the truth, and after Data explained where the checksum was, there was no there was
hang,
no doubt.
Hang on.
What?
How is this being done how he remembered it?
because it said the fire was due to an accident, but he was actually describing the, you know, the events of the battle as he's reliving those memories.
Oh, unless they've taken the actual events of that time from the ship's archive or something. Because the sphere, the thought maker, would be something to insert thoughts and suggestions into someone else's mind. So they must have the facts of what happened on that day in order to reintroduce them into Picard's thoughts.
Could be, yeah.
Yeah.
Otherwise, where are they coming from?
That's a good observation too, yes. Riker realizes that Picard is going to use the famous Picard maneuver. So he orders Data to come up with a suitable defense. Ketzago hails and tells Riker that Bok has been removed from command for his part in this unprofitable venture. Now, that's a Ferengi we know. Data comes up with a defense which involves detecting the correct ship by noting the compression of gas in space and then immobilizing the Stargazer with the tractor beam. I mean, guys, the right ship is the biggest one. that's that easy. 2.3 billion kilometers. One is teeny tiny like right. that. The other one is like huge like that.
Yeah, yeah. I've just worked out what your quote of the week is. Earlier on, Ketzago said that he wasn't going to
question his
captain's motivations. And yet in the next scene, the next section, he's taken him off command of the ship.
Because I think he had time to, well, think about what happened. And he realized that Bok was on a personal vengeance or things like that, which is not profitable for the Ferengis. And probably the fact that he removed Bok from command, that will be profitable for him.
Yes.
Probably.
I presume that's written into some kind of Ferengi code.
Yeah. It's probably that, yeah. Mm. So yeah, my quote of the week is when Riker says, "I hope you're right, Data." And Data responds, "No question of it, sir."
That wasn't what I thought.
Oh, right.
It's almost kind of smug.
Yeah. Yes, very much so.
I mean, he could have responded, "Duh."
Oh, do you know what? That would have been so good.
I hope you're right, Data. Duh. What did you think my quote of the week was?
I thought it was going to be when Data said that he'd come up with a defense of immobilizing the Stargazer with a tractor. And then Riker said, "Make it so."
Ah. Yeah, no.
Because that was almost my quote of the week.
Ah, okay. Next scene, we see the Stargazer that's not that far away, jumping to warp and stopping like 5 meters from the Enterprise. You know, from warp 9 to 0 in an instant. But whatever. The defense works, and Riker heads Picard. He manages to convince him to destroy the sphere with his phaser, although that took quite a long time. Picard had to be convinced. Picard fires at the sphere, which explodes and pushes Picard back. After the sphere is destroyed, Picard returns to normal. He then beams over to the Enterprise, leaving the dead to rest in peace and letting the past remain the past. And that's the end of the episode.
And that was not Patrick Stewart that got blown back from the sphere explosion.
Stunt double, probably?
It was most definitely and very obviously a stunt double.
Yeah, understandably.
I didn't pay attention.
Well, he had hair to start with.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, that's understandable. That's understandable.
I mean, that's what a stunt double's for, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So, this episode, I mean, let's. I picked up on the Picard maneuver, but that's fine, really. I don't really care. I just wanted to be picky and geeky. But this episode is part of those episodes that I wish I would never watch again. And but I had to for this episode. But this one with probably the Naked Now. And Uncle Tara Farpoint, those are the episodes I wish I will never see again. Each time I watch them, I wish I won't have to watch them again. But it's not that it's bad. It's just that it's not bad enough to be memorable, and it's not good enough to be enjoyable, I think.
Yeah. No, I get that.
I like this episode, despite all of its flaws, which it is riddled with them, because it's a little more adventurous, I would say. There is an actual risk in there, not just some goofy fight on a planet with weird weapons in a cage, or with Encounter at Farpoint, which is just weird, or the Naked Now, or Naked, whatever, Naked Time. I forget which one is which. I think it's just a weird episode. This one actually it was a little more down to earth, if that makes any sense, you know? All in all, the frustrating pieces were less severe in this than they were in previous episodes, I would say.
Well, it's certainly a gain in quality compared to the earliest episode, but, you know, as we said, the product, I don't know which one is it, in which order it was produced, this one, if it was produced after the ones we've seen before or not, but the beginning of the first season goes up and down a lot before it starts to go up and gets better with every episode. But we're still in this first series of episodes where it's not quite there yet. And yeah, as I said, this one is one of those, it's just meh, you know, for me at least. What do you think, Dave?
Yeah, I think story-wise, it was kind of okay, but that's as far as it goes, really.
Yeah.
It wasn't bad.
No.
It certainly was not good.
It was right in this zone where, yeah, okay, it has another episode.
Awkward 80s feel that a lot of shows in the 1980s have, like where they don't quite have their footing. You know, I'm thinking of the show Charles in Charge. You remember that show? No. Nope. It's okay. No. It's not very... I remember it being very good, but I just remember that, like, the first season or two just were a little off, and it didn't really get its footing until, like, later seasons. And I've seen that quite a bit with different shows in the 80s. Kind of had, like, the first season is always kind of a... I don't want to say a throw-off season, but kind of a... Just don't... Watch the second season, then if you want to come back, then you go in and go back to it. That's kind of how I look at it.
And I think if the... I was going to say if those episodes were produced now, but they wouldn't be produced like that. But let's say that if a series was produced with today's technical means and things like that, but the quality was like what we've seen so far, I'm not sure they would have gotten a second season or even end of
it may not have
season.
Even got past pilot.
Yeah. But as we said, back then, there was maybe less series, less TV channels and things like that. So they didn't worry that much.
It's not as if they had to fight against, you know, tens of other series to get your attention.
Yes, right. And streaming services that would dump whole seasons of good series or not so good series, depending.
Yes.
Yeah. But yeah, still, as we said, not bad, not good, just average episode, which I really hope now that I won't have to watch again.
Yes. Well, you won't have to watch again for this anyway.
Yeah.
You know, I'm looking at the list of episodes coming up.
Mm-hmm.
You're probably not going to have a very good season.
Well, the first season is not the best one, but it gets better near the end. But yeah,
well, we've still got the fifth produced episode to come yet.
Yes,
so that's where everything's going to fall down.
Which one is it?
Haven, I think, is the name of it.
Okay,
let's just have a look.
Yeah, I don't really remember this one, but I will rediscover it.
Yes.
I will say one thing else that bothers me about this episode.
Okay.
if you look at when the Enterprise-D is towing the Stargazer, yep. Look how big the Stargazer is in comparison to the Enterprise. That's not correct.
It's almost as big as the Enterprise.
Yes.
Yeah. It's way off. They're out of scale. That annoyed me also.
I wonder if it's because they're not directly level with each other. So the Stargazer is actually closer to us. No, but they might be slightly offset. Rather than tractoring it behind them, they're tractoring it on the right-hand side. Oh, they're pulling it from the right-hand side. So because it's closer to us, it appears bigger than it actually is.
I see. I like that excuse. Okay, we'll go with it. All right, I'm good.
I think it's awful.
Well, that brings us to the end of the review of Star Trek The Next Generation Season 1, Episode 9, The Battle.
So, do you remember, a little pun there, the Picard episode Remembrance?
Yes.
Which was the first episode of Star Trek Picard. In the Quantum Archives that Picard went to visit when he was looking for the other copy of the picture that was hanging in his study back at Chateau Picard, we saw a banner, and it said on it, Captain Picard Day.
Yes.
Now, I hadn't heard of Captain Picard Day prior to watching Picard, but apparently it is a thing, but it's also a thing in our world as well. In the Star Trek universe, Captain Picard Day was an annual event held for the school children who were on the ship. Activities on that day included an art contest where the children would create paintings and models of the captain. And then Jean-Luc Picard would then judge these models himself. Now, obviously, for obvious reasons, Picard wasn't a great fan of the event because he didn't really go on with kids. But it was, you know, it was his sacrifice. That happened on Stardate 47457.1, which apparently equates to the 16th of June 2007. Well, 16th of June, sorry.
Oh,
not okay. Not 2007, the 16th of June. So since 2007, in our world, Star Trek fans have celebrated Captain Picard Day on the 16th of June.
Oh, right. So we
I like it.
We're like 6 days away at the moment of recording.
Depending on how quick I edit this, it will be roughly the 16th of June by the time this episode comes out. So happy Captain Picard Day.
Yay. Happy Captain Picard Day, everyone.
That means that so next Tuesday, I'm going to have some tea Earl Grey hot.
Nice.
Yes.
That's a good idea.
I will. Yeah. I think that's a good. That's how I will celebrate and try and play a tin whistle.
Well, then I shall make a doubled effort to make sure this episode comes out on that day. So then you can have tea Earl Grey hot listening to tea Earl Grey hot.
Oh my God!
Fantastic.
Boom. Double whammy.
Yeah. Boom.
Just for a chuckle. In 2370, in the Star Trek universe, on Captain Picard Day, a 7-year-old called Paul Menegay, he won the art contest, with an orange clay sculpture of Captain Picard's head. Picard wasn't particularly impressed with it, but Riker absolutely loved it. He took great pleasure in this whole thing. So Picard actually arranged to have a Commander Riker Day the following month with a plan to enter the competition himself. Now, obviously, I don't know whether that actually happened because this is all centered around the episode The Pegasus, which is in Season 7, which we're probably not going to be reviewing for years yet. But I found that quite funny that Picard would, out of revenge, create an equivalent day for Riker.
Yeah. But isn't that a bit childish? I mean, Riker makes fun of him and he tries to forge a full celebration day for him just to have fun. to make fun of him. Yeah, it's a bit childish.
It's season 7. It's
yeah,
presumably 6 years later from where we are in the timeline now. Riker and Picard, we know, are solid friends.
Yes.
Probably by this stage, certainly. So they might have this little kind of tit-for-tat, to-and-fro thing going on.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
But I would have loved sure to have seen yeah. Captain Commander Riker Day. That would have been great fun to watch. And in fact, in honor of Captain Picard Day, why don't you, dear listeners, create a painting, a model, something in clay, 3D print something, whatever, of Captain Picard, and post it on social media. I don't know. We'll choose a hashtag of some kind. TEGH Picard. There you go. Hashtag TEGH Picard. And then we'll pick our favorites from the one submitted.
I thought you were going to ask our audience to make an orange clay sculpture of our heads.
Oh, now that would be fun.
That would be a lot of fun.
Mine would just be this blob with a beard. Oh, but you're forgetting one thing.
Yes.
Not everybody listening has seen our faces.
Well, we can release this video on YouTube.
We could do. Or, as somebody will be telling you later on, probably Yannick, will tell you about... in fact, it's going to be me.
One of us.
Tell you about where you can watch our YouTube live stream.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, so next Tuesday, Captain Picard Day, we will celebrate the great Jean-Luc Picard, captain
Indeed.
Of the USS Enterprise. Well then, I guess that leaves us with a little bit of housekeeping before we say goodbye. Thanks to everyone who listened to our previous episodes. You can help us spread the love for our show by carving its name on the forehead of George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Abraham Lincoln, and Theodore Roosevelt on Mount Rushmore in the US. Or if you think that might get you in too much trouble, you can simply post our website on social media.
But if you do, then make sure you tag us on Twitter. Oh dear. And you can find our website over at tlgreyhot.org. And while you're there, you can find our show notes, our reviews, find a list of everybody who has guested on this show, including our dear friend Nate here as well. And you can leave a comment on the bottom of every one of our episodes.
You can also send us some email at feedback@tlgreyhot.org. And we are going to read that and... unless you tell us otherwise, we might even read it on the show.
You can tweet us on the Twitter Tweeterverse at TEGH Podcast. And we're also on Telegram at t.me/TEGH Podcast. And that is, as I tried to say earlier and made a right hash of it, the only place where you will get the link to our YouTube unlisted live stream. So if you are really feeling sorry for yourself and you want to punish yourself for something you've done wrong, then you can come and watch us visually as we record this show.
Absolutely. Thanks to Memory Alpha. As always, we have loosely based our review of this week's episode on their work, and this is released under a Creative Commons by Attribution non-commercial license, even though I had to rewrite about 50% of it.
I laughed at the word loosely, but you actually wrote that in there. The rest of this show is released under Creative Commons by Attribution Share Alike license. See our website for full details.
This podcast is part of the Other Side Podcast Network, as I mentioned earlier. Check out our website at otherside.network.
Next week will be a review of Star Trek The Next Generation, Season 1, Episode 10, Hyde and Q.
And that brings us to the end of this week's episode. Thank you, Dave, once again, for joining me. I don't know how you do it every week.
Well, we nearly didn't.
Yes.
I don't know why, but it seemed a little bit more of a challenge for my cerebrum this week. But we got there. I'll edit out all the bad stuff.
Yes.
And put it at the end.
And thank you, Nate, for joining us. Last call, really. Like, 5 minutes before we started the show, because we had someone planned who could not be here tonight, and then Nate nicely jumped in the seat. So thank you very, very much, Nate. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show.
It's always a pleasure to be here. I do enjoy the nerd talk because Star Trek is something I love, and I love to poke at it too.
Yeah. Where else will you discuss the fact that the Picard maneuver is a fraud?
Nowhere.
I'm not going to talk about that with my colleagues at work, that's for sure.
Nope, same. They'll just look at you like you got a lobster growing out of your forehead.
I don't want to overdo the whole call to action thing, but if you are listening to this and you're thinking, do you know what? I would love to go on this show and join the two incredibly intelligent, attractive guys while they review Star Trek, then please do let us know, because as much as we love our existing pool of co-hosts and guests, we don't want to limit it just to them. So if you do want to come and join us and help us out and review one of the episodes coming up, then let us know and we'll bring you on.
Absolutely. Well, that's it for tonight's show. We will be back next week with a whole bunch more of Star Trek. In the meantime, take care of yourselves. Ciao, ciao.
See ya.
See yas.
You're muted. You're not muted. Are you? Say something.
Can you hear me now? No, you can't hear me.
Dr. Crusher responds that it may be true that headaches were once quite common before the brain was charted. No, there's a comma missing. Let's do that again. While the unidentified ship approaches the.
I was about to say we're waiting for your face to catch up with your voice, but I think your voice is trying to catch up with something else.
I watched Star Wars, so I'm speaking Wookiee now. Thanks to everyone who listened.
Okay. I jinxed that. I apologize.
I think I had to wipe something off my face on that one.
You've been listening to a member of the Other Side Podcast Network. Find more about our shows at otherside.network.